Blog Talk Radio.
Denise Griffiths is your partner in success. Tune in each Friday as virtual assistants, industry expert, web developer, and online entrepreneur Denise Griffiths interviews industry experts from one end of the internet to the other. These expert entrepreneurs freely share their business building knowledge and provide practical guidance that will show you how to build and grow your own very successful business, be it online or traditional brick and mortar. Now, ladies and gentlemen, your partner in success, Denise Griffiths.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to your Partner in Success Radio. Today I have the honor of interviewing my dear friend Terry Murphy, who is somebody I really admire greatly. Let me tell you a little bit about Terry. Terry is the president of Terry Murphy Communications Incorporated. As a consultant and speaker, she helps to create new relationships using cutting-edge traditional marketing online communication strategies. In this day and age, critical tools. She is also a published author of 5 books, including her most recent book with Donald Trump, The Best Real Estate Advice I Ever Received, and has authored 4 additional books on sales and leadership. Terry is currently a co-author on a book that addresses how women can improve their selection of a man in a relationship by using a little science in the process. Very interesting. I can't wait for that book to come out. She is co-authoring this book with Dr. Paul Green, who is an industrial psychologist, and he is also an expert in behavioral interviewing. Terry has also produced and hosted both television and radio programs and has been featured on ABC, NBC, and CNBC. I think she knows a little bit about entrepreneurship, don't you? In this interview, we are going to cover a lot of territory, with the emphasis being on women in business. Men are welcome, but we're largely going to focus on women today. So good morning, Terry, and welcome to the show. And before I dive into the tons of questions that I have for you, can you share a little bit about yourself with our audience?
Well, thanks for such a great introduction. I mean, seriously, it makes me sound like I don't sleep, but quite frankly, I'm one of those overachievers, and so I want to get as much done as I can in a minute. You know what I'm saying?
I do, and that's why we're such good friends. Let me interrupt you and tell the audience how we met. Do you mind?
No, go for it.
We were introduced by another friend of ours, a mutual friend of ours, and I got an email from this friend who said, I really want you to meet Terry Murphy. She is, and I'm expletive here, fabulous. Just put something there. And this
She's
is
something.
Not a guy who uses expletives, so I kind of sat up in my chair and went, really?
Whoa.
So I called you, and you called me. No, I called you, and you answered your phone. And the first words out of your mouth, I will never forget this, was, my God, girl, are we the only people in the world working on New Year's Eve? And we were. So we have been best friends ever since.
Well, you know,
that tells you we're workaholics
energy,
together.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the energy attracts energy. I really do. And both of us have a weird sense of commitment to making things better, getting it done. And
I
like that. I mean, there's a lot I don't like about me, but that's one thing I do like about me. You can pretty much, maybe it's the Catholic thing. I don't know. But, you know, I started out, and nobody cares about this, but, you know, you start off and you go, why do people get where they are? I mean, you know, we are responsible for where we end up on the universe and who we are. And we wake up in the morning and nobody force-dressed us and nobody force-fed us. I mean, basically, we are who we are. And I recently am working on the premiere for the documentary of Dr. Benjamin Hooks, who is a remarkable force in the universe for equality, especially, and he happens to be here from Memphis. And the tagline for his premiere, it's called Duty of the Hour, is, are you making the seconds of your life count?
Mm-hmm.
And that has become a mantra for me. Are you making the seconds of your life count? And, you know, I mean, just like everybody else, 1 of 9 kids, no trust fund, limited ability to avail ourselves of the wonderful things in this country, but we're so blessed. And you know what, Denise, as far as I'm concerned, I was told there was this glass ceiling, and you know, because my
for
family
women,
came
right
Yeah, my family came from Italy, and we're first generation. We were told, well, you know, you just need to be good and be quiet and hope somebody will marry you.
Because you're a woman.
Well,
really?
Terry,
you're breaking up. Can you get... Terry, that was all garbled. Can you repeat that? Okay. I lost you. Are you there?
Here. I'm going to...
I don't know what happened. I mean, I can barely hear you, and what I do hear sounds like you're in a tunnel somewhere.
All right. I'm going to call you back on another line.
Oh, no, that's better.
How's that?
That's better. Yeah.
Is it better?
So,
okay.
Much
well,
better.
Well, I am
so
in a landline, but, you know, there's always that. I'm sorry?
Right. Just repeat what you said a few minutes ago.
Oh, I just said that it's imperative that we don't perceive a glass ceiling. And I don't care if you're male or female. In this country, if you have the ability to wake up in this country, you have opportunity. Don't you agree?
I absolutely agree. We've had personal conversations about this, and I do not believe for a moment that you need to be poor or underfed or underserved in the United States of America. This is the best country in the world, and opportunities abound. You need to be awake to them, you need to be alive to them, and you need to take advantage of them.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. I realize that some people are a product of how they were raised, and but we are in a place of opportunity, so I'm all about opportunity. What about you?
Oh, absolutely. And that's why we get along so well, because we wake up every day and wonder what in the world we can do that's new and great and fabulous and that's going to bring prosperity to us and the people around us. It's just how we live our lives.
Exactly. And as far as women are concerned, one of my favorite heroes on the planet is a woman named Margaret Heffernan. And that's H as in hat, E-F as in Frank, F-E-R-N-A-N. And she wrote a book, How She Does It, which she retitled. And she's recently wrote a book called Willful Blindness. And she is a champion for women in business because there's so much about us that's interesting. In the years 2008 to 2009, there were 10.1 million firms that were owned by women. That's 50% or more. And they employed more than 13 million people. And Denise, here's the great part. We generated $1.9 trillion in sales as of 2008. Wow.
You know, I did not know that.
Well, it's not about women empowerment. I'm not there. I'm not into the better than. I'm into the different from. Because that's what makes everything work. And three-quarters of all women-owned businesses are majority-owned by women. And for a total of 7.2 million firms, it's amazing to me that 40% of these are all privately held firms. We know that in this country, entrepreneurship is driving the country because it's not big corporations. They haven't been able to hire. And you know, my husband wrote The 1 Minute Entrepreneur with Ken Blanchard.
Tell people who your husband is, because this is something many people may not know about you. But you're married to quite a famous author as well.
Well, so far, yeah. His name is Don Hudson. That's with a T. And Don is the author, actually, of 14 books. But his New York Times bestseller was The 1 Minute Entrepreneur, and then he followed it up about 2 years later with another New York Times bestseller, The 1 Minute Negotiator, which really got me focusing on both entrepreneurship and women. And so... the one thing we know about women is that in 1 in 5 firms with a revenue over $1 million is women-owned, and 3% of all women-owned firms have revenues of $1 million or more, compared with 6% of men-owned firms. And this is why. Margaret speaks about Zeitgeist, which is a German word for intuition. And we all know that, you know, we've talked about how women have been trained for years to be intuitive. We are naturally intuitive because we have to be. We have to try to figure out if the child is hungry, if they're hurting. We anticipate. Well, that interesting new energy, which had previously looked at as something as almost esoteric, combined with empathy and intuition creates this anticipation of what the consumer wants. And that's why you saw wildly successful companies like Pampered Chef take off, because women were anticipating what the consumer wanted, not giving them what they wanted, anticipating. And that's mm-hmm. where the female energy is in balance right now.
Yeah, and I think I knew that at some kind of cellular level, but I did not know the numbers. I didn't know the sheer numbers of women who are very, very successful in business, and I'm glad to hear that.
Well, we need to know that women do have some issues. When we wrote the 1-Minute Negotiator, and I did the research for women in negotiating with Dr. George Lucas, who is an expert at negotiation and strategies, there are different strategies for negotiation, and very often women feel like they have to be like a man. No. We have to be like the best person we are. And one of the issues that we have in negotiating is that we don't have to become abrasive or aggressive or curt, but we do have to know some of the best strategies. And the first one we have an issue with is that women typically don't ask. We'll suffer through not having lunch. We'll suffer through a hot room where men will just say something. They will ask for mm-hmm. what they want. And I think it's part of the study that we learned from working with Smart Women and Smarter Choices, which is that current book we're working on, is that typically we have such a strong adaptive personalities. We have to be adaptive. We adapt to children, families, issues, that kind of thing. But adaptability is not a strategy for negotiation. It's considered a weakness. So we have to be cognizant that when we adapt, there are certain parts in a negotiation strategy where that's perfectly okay, but for the most part, it is not. And so we take that adaptive issue that we have, and we combine that with either relationships, whether they be personal or professional, and that's where we get in trouble, because you can't diminish self. And one of the things that I found from this extraordinary study with Dr. Green is that when we learn how to set our standards first, you know, our non-negotiables, the standards, then we can create the values around the standards, and then we have the boundaries. And we find that women in general in business have kind of fuzzy boundaries because of the adaptability factor. And we also walk that line, which you and I have talked about not being bitchy. You know, if we're strong, we're bitchy. No, I think if we're strong, we're strong. It depends on how you say it.
Yeah. Well, I live in the Deep South, and my attitude is I'm a very strong woman. Sometimes I may come across to somebody who may not meet me in strength as being bitchy or being a little bit abrasive. I don't think that I am. I tend to state what I think, but a lot of people don't like that. And, you know, my attitude about that is, well, I'm sorry you don't like it. I'll find somebody.
Just because I know you, and I know I've referred people to work with you, and of course you've got that gorgeous voice, and it's lovely and soft,
and I can say unpalatable things. Right?
I truly say unpalatable.
No,
it's a little different when you're
a
Chicago Italian.
I get by with a lot that I shouldn't. Yeah.
Yeah, I think the Chicago Italian just comes straight out, and. And so you have to be a little bit careful. I think that in general, we're not going to get into presentation skills here, but perfecting presentation skills, being firm, without being. And I'm going to use the word manly. I don't want to suggest that we can't be anything but who we are. But when you walk in confidence, when you walk in certainty, when you walk with integrity, when you walk with wisdom, that's pretty. Indisputable. It's going to tell somebody else that you got it going on.
Well, and, you know, on a completely, I'm going to go off on a bit of a tangent here, but not so much. There are studies that prove that women and men who walk upright, you know, they're clearly not intimidated by somebody else. They're not worried. They're not threatened. They're unlikely to be mugged or assaulted. People just leave them alone. People understand that they may not be a pushover.
Exactly. And I like to use, and regardless of your political preferences, but if you look at somebody who is a strong female, the Margaret Thatchers, the Hillary Clintons of the world, generally no one's going to try to mug them because they set off an aura that says, don't mess with me. I got it going on. And I'm not even talking about physical mugging. I'm talking about emotional mugging, victimization.
Right.
I do a lot of work with some of the women's groups here when I launched the Women's Wisdom Network several years ago. And it really stems from that personal power, which comes from not arrogance, but certainty, that you're walking.
And there's
a huge
difference.
Big.
Yeah.
I mean, nothing's more unattractive to me than arrogance, because there's always somebody bigger, brighter, smarter, richer, more informed. I mean, please. We have to just be the best we can be. And as women in business, being better negotiators, I think, is really important. Another mistake that women make in business is that when they go into negotiations, and, you know, we negotiate every day, deadlines, that kind of thing. And it's not our fault, because we don't get to practice in this country as much as you do in other countries. But one of the things that we do is we think a deal is done because we shake our hand on it.
Mm.
No. It's never done until all the fine print is sealed in. And there are negotiation issues like what we call nibbling, where people kind of change things. I didn't understand, this wasn't quite right. And so very often women will lose at that negotiation table because they don't clarify. And so one of the best ways to do that is the words, I'm confused, let's clarify.
Yeah, in my industry, both of them, we call that scope creep. And that can kill, it won't kill the project. If you're like me, you will deliver the project, but you may have lost money on it. And you never want to be in business to lose money. So negotiating straight up front, being very clear about your expectations and what the deliverables are, I think, are so, so critical, no matter what industry you're in.
Good point. Really good point. The other thing I think that that would help women in business is that so often we do so many things. We wear so many hats. Entrepreneurs, and this is not limited just to women, but entrepreneurs wear several hats. You know, we're the CEO, we're the janitor, we're the ordering department, we're the marketing department.
We're the cook.
We're the cook. A delegation is not something that women do well, because we've had to do a lot of things by ourselves.
Mm.
And delegation in any entrepreneurial business is important. And, you know, virtual work is so good because if you're not good at something and it's going to take you 3 weeks to learn it, you have to look at the long term on that. But delegating out so that you can be the, you know, if you're going to get paid the big dollars, in other words, if your time is worth $100 an hour, you don't be needing to do a $10 an hour filing job.
Right.
So that prioritization, that business planning. And, you know, part of the business planning, Denise, is having that elevator speech so that people know exactly what you do. Because marketing today, as you know, is so noisy. It's confusing. Mm-hmm. You get a third of a second to get someone's attention. So having a really finely honed benefit statement about what you do and how you do it helps you, because people are looking for solutions. I don't think that's changed. But the marketplace is noisy with solutions.
And I love that you phrased it like that, benefit solution, because so many people, and I see this in taglines, you know, I'm a web developer and a virtual assistant, online business manager, and I see so many people coming into both of my industries, and their tagline is pretty much all about them. There's no benefit at all. And I think they're really missing the mark. So listen, this is what I can do for you. This is what I can take off of your plate.
Well, interesting you bring that up, because, oh, you're absolutely right. One of the initiatives that I speak about is generational communication dynamics. And the reason for that is because for the first time in our country, we have four different generations working side by side, working key issue here. And so when you have four different age groups, they were all launched at different times in the universe, have different core values and preferences, have different modes of communication. And as a business entrepreneur, female or male, you've got to know how to resonate with that core value and preference, or at least cater, if that's your demographic, to how they want information disseminated. Mm-hmm. And so when you talk about the way people communicate, when we get into the whole online marketing piece with websites, you know, I'm always amazed at people who don't understand that they're leaving money on the table because they're not taking into consideration the fact that Gen X and Gen Y is not interested in your experience. They just want a good experience if they work with you. So if you're a bank and you've been in business for 150 years, to them, you're just old. So
right.
if you're working to communicate value, you don't. It's not your value. It's not what you've done, but what does it do for the end user? So it's always what's in it for me. And I think advertising age does the greatest job of helping us understand how to communicate those values on a spectrum that delivers to four different groups.
Right. And yeah, and I preach this all the time. You're dead on correct. Your website is, it's basically, you know, your home on the web, if you will. And when people land there, Terry, all they want to know is what's in it for them. That's it, period, zip, nada, nothing else. What's in it for them? How can you help them? And so many people still don't quite understand that. They want to put up their credentials, and they want to tell people, you know, I've done this, and I'm really great at this, and look at me, that's all fine. But it is not germane to the end user. They want to know how you can help them quickly, be cost-effective, and get them out of the jam they're in. That's all they need. That's it.
You're exactly right, especially if they want to compare. They're going to use the information that is there later. Their first is, are you a solution to my problem? Maybe second might be, is it cost-effective as I compare you to the universe, not just my local, you know, place? And then thirdly, then I will go in later and decide, is that important to me that you have this certification? Is it important to me that you are, you know, have been a, that
yeah,
you've
what
got
are
peer recognition?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But that's where the community comes in, because if you have a well-orchestrated message on the web, and again, that's your expertise, but you and I both know that if they get there and it's all about them, it's not engaging, I can't hear you, there's no social media icons there so I can see that you are connected in some way, that you get it, I don't have any video of you, I can't tell who you are, what you really are, I want to see that transparency, I may move on. And so having that implied endorsement from other people, because trust is a big issue on the net, as you know. You know better than anyone else. And so how do you communicate that?
Yeah, I was watching one of Bob Berg's videos the other day, and you're in one of his books, by the way. You know this.
I mean, all of you.
Telling our audience. But Bob Berg, of course, the author of The Go-Giver, and he said those three magic words in this video, know, like, and trust.
Yeah,
His
first book, if anybody's listening and is wondering about networking, you know, now networking everybody thinks is electronic. Bob Berg is the quintessential cornerstone of successful networking, and he wrote a book called Endless Referrals. And it is, even though it's been written several years, if someone would follow how he creates the experience around the meeting by doing simple personal things, you would understand that he is a treasure trove of brilliant information. He's a great entrepreneur, and thanks for bringing him up. And that's Berg, B-U-R-G. It's berg.com if anybody's interested. But
interviewed him recently. But to just give you an example of what Terry's talking about here, I was looking at Bob's Facebook page the other day, and he personally responds to everybody who posts something on his wall, whether it's in response, his Facebook wall, whether it's in response to something that he posted or if they just go write him a little note. He always responds with their name. And somebody actually made the comment, Terry, I meant to send you a note about this. They actually made the comment the other day, Bob, it is so wonderful, and I'm paraphrasing, that you go to the trouble, because maybe they think he's inaccessible, but that you go to the trouble of responding to all of us and you call us by name. Small thing, very important.
Well, let me tell you a secret about Bob Berg. If he was in a room with 35 or 40 people, he would remember every single person's name.
Wow.
I have to wear a name tag for my husband. Yeah, I mean, seriously. I do,
too.
Yeah,
I don't
remember
names.
Which one is it? No, seriously, Bob is he is gifted that way, but he also knows the power of presence. Bob is one of the most amazing people, and he understands that the power of hearing or seeing your name is has impact. And for those
and as women,
millennials,
we need to really pay attention to that.
Well, we're so busy accessing information, and I'm not saying women and specifically. People say, "Well, I don't remember names." No, you're not listening. You know, you're not hearing the name. And
right.
And very often, I will say, "Is that spelled with a K or a C? How would you spell that?" I mean, even something simple like Smith. And today, you know, there's so many ways to spell everything. So I don't mind asking exactly. But power is always in the presentation because at the end of the day, Denise, people want to work with people they know, like, and trust. I think people like to have a little fun in the process. I don't like to take things too seriously. If you can't just have a little fun with it, and I understand people who aren't wired that way, but there's no reason that we have to doom and gloom just because it's business. So I think that besides understanding the power of presentation, looking people in the eye, shaking their hand, using their name, that's so important. And as an entrepreneur, you want to be able to do that. And the whole idea of an elevator benefit statement is to ask so that people will ask you more about what you do. Well, to explain that, well, I help people create a home on the web so that they can get more business. Well, tell me a little bit more about that so that they can move on and understand, can I use this? And, of course, Bob will tell you this, one of the strongest things an entrepreneur can do when they meet someone is tell me about what you do so that I can refer you to people that I know that might need your services.
Hmm.
Totally different than give me your card,
mm-hmm.
right?
Very.
So, I mean, that's kind of an important piece. I find that a lot of businesses, I mean, women especially, oh, I'm so passionate about making cupcakes or I'm so passionate about being a service provider. Passion is a great thing, but that doesn't pay. Passion just keeps you connected when things aren't going well. So where's the business plan? I was helping a wonderful little entrepreneur here. She's working a lot of jobs, and she makes the most adorable holiday stockings for pets. And if you really want to impress that big corporate client who has everything, make a stocking for their dog named Fluffy, okay? And so she made these stockings. And I said, well, this is great. I'll take 10 and hear the different names. And, you know, I bought little dog treats and kitty treats and horse treats and everything for whoever. But then I said to her, okay, let's do the business plan. How much are these costing you? She goes, I don't know.
Oh.
Well, if you don't know how much they're costing you, then how do you know you're charging enough? Well, she said, I can't figure out what each little thing is. I said, no, but if you spent $100 on supplies and you got 20 stockings, then you would know what each one cost you. This is second year she's done it, and she still doesn't know what her bottom line is.
So she had no profit model in mind at all.
Well, remember, not everybody has those words profit model, but no. Basically, I said, this isn't rocket science. If you save all your receipts and you see that you spent $100, then we know that you have to get X amount of money back to cover the 100 and your gas and your time and your delivery and your packaging. See? So I think that a business plan scares a lot of people because they think they have to have some big formal thing. It doesn't have to be quite that formal, but I just spoke to another one. She wants to publish a cookbook. Oh, that's lovely. And she happens to be a person of notoriety. That's even better. Great. And I said, well, you know, and who are you going, how are you going to sell this? I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And where are you going to sell it? I don't know. And how much, you know, why are you doing this? Well, for money. Okay, good. But, you know, do you have a budget? I don't know. Well, you got to have a budget.
Oh,
you know, you got to know if you only have $100, you're not going to make a lot of them.
And you know, Terry, what I find with women in particular, men not so much. They seem to have a better grasp on what their time should be worth. But I have noticed, particularly in my industry, the VA industry, online business managers, more what we're going towards now, people will say, well, I want to be paid for my time, but I don't know what my time is worth. And then they will put in untold hours that they just cannot be billed for. But it's okay. No, it's not okay. You have to factor your time into your budget.
I think you bring up a really good point, Denise, and here it is. If you're listening to this and you're in your 30s, you got some time. If you're listening to this and you're in your 60s, you know that the runway is a lot shorter. So at the end of the day, if you're spending 20 hours, it's not going to feel the same because you don't want to waste those moments of your life. And so you have to give yourself some respect for what is your time worth, because if you don't put a dollar amount on it, no one else will.
Right. And they're not going to respect you at all.
No, and that respect is the issue of, if you know, if it's free, what do you care? It's free.
Exactly. It's useless.
And so,
it's kind of like giving kids bikes all their lives or cars all of their lives. They haven't earned them. They don't care. You wrap it around a pole,
they don't care.
Mommy, give me another one.
Yeah, they don't. Right. They don't have the value proposition.
Right.
When you understand that you are dead tired, you know, you've been standing all day or you've been doing whatever all day, and you've only made X amount of dollars, it says to you in your heart and your soul, this is not worth it to me, okay? I want to do something where I can make more money with less effort. I want to work smarter, not harder. And I'm not saying in the beginning of your job or your new project that you're not going to put in that front-end time. Of course you are. But you have to know where to draw the line. As an example, as a speaker, I must get a number of calls that people want me to do something for them for free. And I do have a schedule of how many pro bonos I will do, like you do, in a year. But it's not just getting up there for an hour, 90 minutes, or a half a day. It's all the preparation. It's, you know, all of the preparation for that particular program, all of the preparation to get there so that you could do that. So, I mean, you really got to give yourself some value for your time. And then there's one other really persnickety piece about women in business, and they never give themselves any time off.
I know. And you and I have both talked to each other about this. This is a subject close to our hearts because we don't do it. We talk about it. We try. But we don't know how to do it. We don't know how to just relax and take care of ourselves.
Well,
and that's a huge thing, because if we can't regroup, we're in deep trouble.
I had a wonderful manager when I was a top salesperson, and I was absolutely doubled over with pneumonia. And he said, he knew better than to say, you know, you need to go home and take care of yourself, because he knew I would never let people down. I mean, he knew that my commitment to my customer was more important than unfortunately, than to myself. And all he said to me, Denise, was this: you know, sometimes you just have to sharpen the axe. And it made me understand, having been a farm kid, that when the axe was sharp, the wood chopped much easier.
Right. And with
Here's
less
my
effort.
Thing.
Yep.
I really envy those women who look great all the time and who take the time to get their nails done and have lunch once in a while. And I used to consider that fluffy. I used to, like, think that wasn't necessary. But honestly, it's so much better for your production, for your sense of being, for your joy factor, to get some refreshment, so that even if you're in your little castle in the sky working away, that you get some new energy to give you a different perspective.
So true. My business coach has been harping at me for that very thing. She said, well, when do you get out? I don't. Why not? I don't know. I mean, ever since I started with her, this has been...
Isn't she wonderful?
Well,
I think part of it, I think part of it is...
And you refer her to me, and I love her.
Oh, my God.
But I'll tell you what,
stand in line.
She stands on top of my head. She is unforgiving, which I need. I need somebody stronger and tougher than I am to say, Denise, what the hell? And she does. Maybe not in quite those terms, but she does. And let me tell you, not too many people are willing to talk to me like that. So it's a very
important
live.
Thing for me. Yeah.
And live.
And keep breathing.
Well, and I will pay tell her you to abuse me. It's terrible. Mm-hmm.
No, I think really what it is, and we're talking about your coach, is that she understands that we don't know how to function outside of work.
We don't.
Because we have this Yeah, and because we just that we're just standing, it's sort of like, oh, now what do I do? And so it has to be planned. And then once we understand how much better it feels and how much more productive we are going back to work, it becomes a value to us. So we need people that will help us stay committed to, even if it's a, and this I'm saying to all women out there, I just did a big program for Women on the Move here, and I said, for the woman entrepreneur, we're so busy working in the business, and then we've got to have time to work on the business, and then we have to have time to work on ourselves and then the rest of our lives. But if we don't schedule it, and I mean it can be something as minute as 15 minutes somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
15 minutes.
Shut it down.
Making a call.
Right.
Just shutting it down. Right. Sitting out on the porch. Having a cup of tea, but without gulping it.
Right.
I'd like to say, I mean, the last thing I want to do is interrupt my day to go out for a lunch. Well, then don't go out for lunch. Meet somebody for wine and cheese later. Go to a movie in the middle of the day, and if you're more productive at night. I mean, do something that gets you out of the thought process so you can go back refreshed. One of my favorite authors is Orison Swett Marden. If I ever got to meet somebody from another life, I would love to meet him because he was remarkable. And he talks about that. And he is a strong, wonderful work ethic, but he says when you step away and come back, you'll be surprised at how strong your focus can be because you've given yourself that perspective.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you have to watch your energy levels, too. I mean, I, like you, I wake up early in the morning, my eyes open, the devil says, oh, crap, she's awake. I hit the floor running. And, I mean, I go until about 2:30 in the afternoon. And I have discovered that around 2:30, 3 o'clock, I'm drained. And I'm looking at the same piece of code over and over again. Or I can barely even cobble together a cogent sentence. Even if I'm talking to one of my cats, I'm like, you, oh, words, let me find words. I'm exhausted. So I have learned, because I have just shot through my reserves of energy by then, I have learned to shut it down, walk away, go outside, take the dog for a run, go grocery shopping, go cook something. I literally, Terry, have taught myself, and I had to teach myself this. This is how sad this is. Shut my office door. I never shut doors in my house. I close my office door because if I go past it, it's a reminder. It's not time for me to go back in there yet. I'm not feeling up to par yet. So maybe half hour later, an hour later, I'm back in and I am refreshed and I am kicking stuff all over the room. I'm having a good time. But you have to really pay attention to your energy ebbs and flows and work with that.
No, I think that's a great perspective, and the closing the door is the important thing because we have too many reminders of what we need to get done. But let's go back and visit the coach thing again because, you know, women especially, we just champion through. You know, we just figure if we do it stronger, harder, better, we're going to get through it. And the fact is that sometimes we need somebody to call us on, did you see the spinach on your teeth?
Yeah, and you can't work in a vacuum. You can't. You cannot exist in a vacuum. And we tend to do that.
Well, we tend to think that we have to do it all ourselves. Well, that Wonder Woman thing.
Yeah.
That whole Wonder Woman concept is a bit annoying. There's nothing wrong.
Unless you look like her, which I don't, but come on. You know,
Yeah, well, there's that.
If I look like her, I have to be in business. It's okay.
Well, you know, and that's another thing. You look at some people, and we're going to go back to presentation here because we are visual beings. And you look at some people who clearly have the same 24 hours you and I have. We all have the same, even Mr. Donald. And yet you can tell that they have not given any of that time to themselves.
I know.
A good haircut. Getting the clothes tailored. Having them cleaned. A gym. And I mean, I don't try to press it on people, but I do say that health is one of the sexiest things that are out there. I don't want to be sick. And as you get older, you realize that your body's less forgiving. You do need to take care of it better.
Mm-hmm.
It's never been easier. The internet has given us so many opportunities to learn. If you can't, just tape Dr. Oz. He gives such great information every day.
I know.
But that's part of the business plan that we were just talking about. You know, it's It's about defining what you have to have. You know, with this Smart Women book that we're doing, here's something that was very interesting to me, and it's I know we're switching back and forth for business to personal, but it almost is interchangeable.
But it is, because we tend to, as entrepreneurs, it's all business and it's all personal.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't see much of a demarcation there, to be honest with you.
Well, there isn't. There really isn't, because at the core of your being, it's you are only going to get in life what you expect. And so if you expect to wake up in a place where you have electricity and running water and food, you know, you're not going to suddenly not do that, because it's mm-hmm. part of your reality. But one of the things that is interesting to me is that women who had a pre-written, a key word here, pre-written conception of what they wanted in a relationship, and this sounds funny, but it's just like the same thing we teach with goal setting. The goals in writing have a 4-time propensity for being fulfilled, because they're in writing, because the focus continues, because you see them and you go towards that which you have visualized.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you and I would never visualize.
People make vision boards, right?
Exactly. And they do that so they can clarify their purpose. And so Sigourney Weaver was interesting. She said, I made the list, and then I lost the list, but I found the guy. But it was exactly what was on the list. And that
she
sounds
had already
like,
put that into her head.
Exactly. And it's unfortunate, because one of the, and I think we all struggle with this, because of the multi-global media, the pounding of the superstars that, you know, the Madonnas of the world and the people that clearly seem to have it all kind of thing, we have this comparative thing that we do and says, well, my God, if I can't be Louis Pasteur, who am I going to be?
And we
all know that by our very being in the universe, we have a piece in the puzzle, because of just how you and I were connected, and just how Bob and I were connected, and just how Sandy and I were connected. It's all been referral. It's all been part of a major puzzle. And so when you look at your business plan and you say, this is what I envision, and if the business plan is a personal plan for finding a mate or finding a partner or finding a business partner, it's all the same. You have to know what you want before you get there. And one of the great things that Dr. Green did with his behavioral interviewing is that he asks questions in such a way that gives you the what as well as the why. Important when you say to someone, well, let's say that you have children and you are meeting someone who also has children from his marriage, and you say, tell me about how often do you see your kids? And he goes, I see them every Saturday. And you know, in your mind, you go, check. Well, good, he interacts with his children. No check. Check would be, the better question would be, tell me a time that you had with the kids that resonates with you. And he goes, oh, well, you know, we had an away game, so we made it a camping trip. In other words, you can tell he's truly interactive with his children.
Mm-hmm.
If that's a standard that you're looking for, that tells you more than, I have Saturdays. And what he really means is he's in the back, the kids are in the backyard, and he's watching a game.
See, I would have never thought of that.
Behavioral interviewing. Dr. Green wrote Get Talent and Get Hired. And from doing the interviews with these women, which we will continue to do, what it does is reveal the behavior, because we know that the past behavior is a very strong predictor of future behavior. As an example, if you know what kind of a relationship that this person had with their mother, their sisters, how they treat servers. I mean, the funny story was, I dated someone who said they had a Porsche, and really what he meant to say is he had the hood of a Porsche. He didn't really have the whole car, but I didn't know to ask. So, again,
I'm sorry, that's
clarification. But people can fake the answers, but they can't fake the behavior.
When did he figure out that the penny would drop?
Well,
eventually
that.
You're going to figure out that there's no steering wheel attached to
this. Well, it's a funny way to say it. But the idea, the idea for the book was, if you were going to have lunch with someone, if you were going to invest time to look for a partner, by the end of a tuna sandwich, can you determine, based on the way you've asked your questions and the way they've answered them, if you want to go on to another opportunity to connect? Mm-hmm. And that is much easier than, oh, he's nice, and maybe we'll go out again, because you don't really know. You don't want to invest time. This is, you know, for women that are looking for a meaningful, significant relationship. And you just don't want to waste your time or your energy to find out. And the saddest thing I hear, Denise, is women going, oh, I'm so afraid I'm going to date another loser, or why do I keep getting the same kind of guy? Well, because you're not seeing the signals. And the signals are there. Why aren't you seeing the signals? Well, that's why Margaret wrote her book, Willful Blindness, because we are conditioned to look at things that are secure for us. So if your mother was victimized or verbally abused or whatever, that is something you think is normal.
Hmm. Wow.
So what we're trying to do with the book is to give women a selection process that reveals past behavior so they can make an informed decision.
Now, Terry, this could hold true for business relationships, personal relationships, relationships with just about anybody, right?
Oh, absolutely. When he wrote Get Hired, and he's brilliant at these behavioral interviews, you're trying to determine the potential of someone in a job.
Mm-hmm.
And you do that by asking them, tell me a time when there was a problem in the workplace with a due date and you ran out of time. Tell me what happened. And they go, well, we just had to work through the night to make sure it got done because we... Okay, that gives you an indication that the person has what? Perseverance, determination.
Right.
Because
and they're loyal to
women,
the project.
Oh, my God. We've already done 50 or 60 interviews, and these women go, oh, I want them to be honest, and I want them to have high integrity, but they don't know how to determine.
Isn't that always the first thing? All of my friends, anybody, my whole lifetime, if I've ever heard anything, and this holds true for personal relationships and business relationships, honesty is the first thing that comes out of their mouth. There's a reason for that.
Well, you wonder, so who wants somebody who's dishonest? Well, no one.
Yeah.
But what's honest? And they just did a big story on white lies, that kind of thing. Honesty means remember, when we're in a brand new relationship, the last thing we want to show you is where we're not perfect.
Mm-hmm.
So honesty, tell me a time that, you know, well, we have to go back to the store, the lady gave me too much money. Indicates some honesty here, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the predictability of behavior is based on past behavior, because you can change how you appear, you can lie a lot. One of the saddest stories we heard was a woman who was swept off her feet by Mr. Wonderful. I mean, he was wealthy, he was good looking, he sent her flowers, filled her office with flowers every day. Bought her jewelry, jetted off here, and once the chase was over, once they got married, it was game over.
Just like that?
Just like that. Because
wow.
For this particular person, she didn't want to choose to look at, you know, what happened before. What was your relationship like? Why did it end? It's not like you're cross-examining someone, but you can ask questions several different ways to get a revelation of the behavior behind the activity.
Hmm.
And this woman's devastated. And she says, oh, but I still love him. No, you don't love him. You love what the experience was, because it made you feel valid and worthwhile and pretty and desirable. But that wasn't love. That was deception.
Why would you love somebody who mistreated you? I've never understood that.
Because you don't think you have value.
Maybe it's just because I am tough-minded, but boy, oh boy.
You have your standards. You have your standards.
Yeah.
I said, and that's what I'm saying. These women are beautiful. They're generous. They're sweet. They're good people. But they don't want to give themselves value because they're comparing themselves to Lady Gaga or Madonna, a fashion model, which I happen to know some of the best photographers. They don't look like that.
explained.
So I get it. And my goal is to help women understand that they have value just by who they are, not what they do, that they deserve to be loved in a way that they choose to be loved. And that doesn't mean it has to be they have to be in a relationship, because if you don't find what you need in a relationship, you don't settle for something that gives you part. You know, in other words, you don't put less than premium in your car. If your car takes premium, it ain't going to work.
Well,
you hold out for premium. And then you avoid the whole desperation piece, Denise.
Right,
you're not so desperate because oh, I haven't gone out in 10 years. Well, have you had a plan? Part of your business plan is, do you have a plan to meet people? And it's not like, okay, I don't do bars. Well, neither do I. But there's common interest. There's, you know, there's cooking. There's wine tasting. There's bird watching. There's golfing. There's referrals, personal referrals. And one of the other things we
found,
and
I'm not joking, I'm laughing, but I'm not joking.
No,
I mean, the best
course.
Person to set you up is somebody who knows you, whether
exactly.
it's, you know, with a business person or whether it's, you know, a personal thing. People who know you, know what your needs are, know what your boundaries are, they're the best person to go to and say, look, I'm looking for a web developer. I'm looking for a photographer. I'm looking for a date. You go to friends who know you.
Well, we definitely heavily depend on those lateral referrals because
right.
it implies trust. There's an implied endorsement. If I know that you know someone who knows me, that makes me much more comfortable than maybe going to some place where I don't know this person at all. But at the end of the day, you have to know what feels good for you. And that whole desperation piece doesn't have to be there, because if you love yourself enough to, A, take care of yourself, take care of your health, create a space for yourself. And I remember having a counselor help me and say, you have to feather your nest. You have to make this lovely place that you live. In other words, you have to be vibrating at a happy, personally joyful level in order to attract what you want. It's sort of like if you're on AM and you're trying to get FM, you're not going to do it because you're not vibrating at that level. And so, you know, maybe you can't afford to have champagne, but you can have it one time on your birthday. You know what I'm saying? Or maybe you can't afford to do, but you will do one thing that is indulgent for you. And for me, and I think I told you this, was I was tasked once a week to buy a flower for my desk. Now, where I come from, that is a total indulgence to have fresh flowers. And I was told I had to do it. I remember walking around the grocery store like an hour trying to buy one flower, not even a rose, one flower, because it was going to be a dollar. I mean, it was going to be a dollar. And I mean, it took that long for me to understand that it wasn't the dollar and it wasn't the flower. It was the connection to me that I deserve to have that joy, that eye candy, that beauty on my desk.
Right.
And it really
I love that story.
That's a tough one. I mean, it sounds silly now, but it took a lot. I mean, I'd talk to myself and go, what the heck's wrong with you? Just go buy a damn flower. Buy a flower.
I know.
Buy any flower. Well, no, if you're going to spend a dollar, it's got to be a really nice flower.
Me being so practical, I would have gotten a fake one, just rinsed it off when it got tested.
Exactly. And that's not
what you should do.
No. Because it's meant to reinforce that we deserve all of the beauty and the joy and the love of the universe. And until we look at that glass so full, that I am valuable, that I am worthy, that I am a smart person. I may not be the smartest person, but I'm going to be the best me that I can be. And I'm going to be the most engaging person because I come from a place of abundance and love. And my joy is to help you with your web work, or to help you with your health services, or to get you on this bus. Whatever you do, when you do it, that is so attractive. And we can only attract that which we give. So I really think that women in business today need to understand that we have to resuscitate ourselves just as often. And part of that becomes our voice. And we know you and I talk about how are you a voice in such a busy marketplace. And we do mm-hmm. that, of course, by revealing to people who we are and what we do, and we do that through, obviously, blogging and video, which is going to be a huge
media.
Part.
Yeah,
and social
absolutely.
Media. And you and I both know how totally misunderstood that is.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't claim to be an expert in any way, shape, or form, but I understand that the channels are there for us to connect because, again, people want to connect. It wouldn't be so
they
huge
do.
If people didn't want to connect.
They do. And I really want to go back to something you said kind of at the top of the hour, and we're running out of time. I really need to bring you back because I have so many questions that we didn't even cover. There's a ton of stuff. But one of the things that you said very early on was that we now have four generations of people working side by side, and we need to get our message to them in different ways. And social media, as you know, and you know, we've talked about this in private conversations, on your website, in your social media, you pretty well need to hit all of the high points. You need to have your website. You need to have your social media in place, the holy three, Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook at a bare minimum. You do need to have video. It may not need to be your face, but you need to have video of some description. You need to have a mobile site. Mobile right now, if you don't have it, you are standing still. There are so many different ways. Mobile is for the younger kids. Videos, just about anybody wants to see those. A plain old brochure site. Everybody needs to be addressed.
Mashable reports by the year 2013, all content will be video. So,
wow.
91%. So what that means is if you're an entrepreneur, you've got to have a high. I'm Terry Murphy, and you know what I love best about helping people with their it's 1 minute. As you know, I did work for Kodak for a year, and they've got a great little Blade Touch. I mean, I can work it. It has two buttons. Get good audio. It's imperative that you have good audio. Don't have to have great video. Have to have good audio. And get people enjoying what you've done for them. It's not about you. I think that's the best.
That's exactly.
And you know what? You and I probably should do a radio show on how to connect and convert prospects to profits using the web.
I agree. I think we absolutely should. I really want you to come back. Do you mind coming back later on in maybe the month or next month?
Absolutely. Would love to.
Because we've got a ton of stuff to keep uncovering. And every time we talk, I discover something new. And I'm like, my hand's up. You couldn't see me because you're in Memphis and I'm in Lafayette, Louisiana. But there was a couple of times my hand was up in the air. You couldn't see me. Go, me. I have a question. Keep that picture in your mind.
we'll be delighted to join thank you again. And thank you so much for this gracious invitation. I sure hope it helps a number of people. And I know that you do such a great job.
Well, tell people where they can find you. I haven't even had a chance to tell people where to send them, if they want to connect with you, because you're so gracious with your time, and I would love people to connect directly with you.
I must tell you that I'm having my website redone as we speak because it is getting old, like the rest of us.
Is that one that I'm working on?
It could be. It's
is that a
Tom Terry? Yeah, Terri at terrymurphy.com, and that's Murphy, but it's just Terry with an Itteri at terrymurphy.com. And we're going to have smart women up in a couple of weeks, and where anybody that's on, if they're interested in an interview, they can just let me know.
Okay. Well, it's terrymurphy.com, and we will be rebuilding that quickly.
Okay.
We are. I promise. It's on my task list. Terry, thank you so, so much for being with me here today. As usual, I thoroughly enjoy your company and your wisdom, and I know that our audience has enjoyed it as much as I have. And the hope is that there's a lot of takeaways. Anybody who didn't make it onto the show today, you can download in about an hour, or it will be in iTunes later on today. Thank you, everybody, for being here today, and I wish you a very wonderful weekend. And this is Denise Griffiths and Terry Murphy, and we wish you a great day, a great weekend, and I will... Thank you, Terry.
Bye, dear.
Bye.